Good morning, and welcome to Shattering Myths. It's a program dedicated to the millions of people throughout the world who realize that the governments, the media, the military, the educational systems, and the religious institutions are corrupt and cannot be fixed. Yada is the normal host, but he's on vacation, and he, quite frankly, he must have had a lost his mind for a moment. He invited me to cover for him, so I will endure to do the best I can. And I'll be joined by the world's greatest producer, which is, his name is Scott. And, together we'll, explore the Torah, and some things that, quite frankly, I find very, very exciting, that Yahweh has said.
Well, let me know when he shows up. I'm excited to meet him.
Just a brief thing. I'm a regular caller. Scott knows I call in the Shattering Myths, and I would encourage people not to to do that if they wish to, because I'm never usually the least bit nervous speaking on the air. Yada and Scott are both very warm and polite, and they allow us to come in and ask our questions and speak our minds and so forth. Today, however, I'm a little bit nervous, as you might be able to check in my voice, but the subject matter is so exciting that I'm sure I'll overcome the stage fright at some point. The first area that I wanted to talk about, Scott, because Yada left me with the idea, you know, speak to what interests you, is something that my wife is always saying, and she has always said that the soul is your most important thing that to worry about. It's the only thing that, frankly, can live past our lifetime, our normal life. So I thought we would start with that. But right before I do, I just want to say one little thing about Yada's books. About 6 or 7 years ago, I started reading Yada Yah, and I realized how many things I didn't know. I was a Christian at that time, and unfortunately, I really didn't know what God had to say. Now, he's done a massive job with this, with his books. The ones that I highly recommend that you would read would be Yada Yada, that you can find on yadayada.com, The Introduction to God.org, and of course, questioningpaul.com. And they are all free. They're a massive undertaking. Yeah, I must warn you, they're in the thousands of pages. And they're translations of the Torah, Prophet and Psalms from the oldest known records we have, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the first, second, third, even the fourth century of the Witness Writing, and even some of the oldest Masoretic texts as well. So based on when you read these things, what is so much fun is that he didn't just translate them. He tells you how he translates these words. He tells you how he, why he chose this, why he chose that. He'll talk about the grammar as well, so you'll understand exactly how these words are put together. He will also give you a history. There's an enormous amount of history in these books. There's an enormous amount of scientific discovery, archaeology. And when I first picked them up, Scott, I couldn't put them down. I just kept reading and reading and reading and reading. And it exposed, of course, all the myths, just like this show is programmed to do. It exposed everything that I thought I knew, and just opened up a whole world of things that I had never even considered.
The part that I like a lot about it is that he actually wants you to do your own translations. He wants you to... He actually wants, I know that we've had stuff lately to where people are challenged his translations, and if you challenge his, if you think you have a different translation, you can come to him and ask him the question. With the meat, as far as that goes, James agrees that you shouldn't eat pork. But he presents it to Yada in a way that Yada, you know, says, okay, I understand where you're coming with that, but I just see it this way. And they actually have a conversation about it. It's not attacking his how he went about it. He tells you how he comes to his translations. He walks you through his thought process.
Yeah.
And he wants you to do your own. Learn on your own. Learn your own translations and come up with, you know, he's never had a problem with people, you know, challenging his translations. And that's, I think to me, that's a lot of fun.
It is, and that's the way I think it's supposed to be. You know, Yahweh said to Shemar Torah to examine his words. He didn't say that I have to be an expert on it. I certainly don't have to be a theologian. He wants you to study it and try to understand what he has to say so that you can engage with him, so you can know what he's what he wants. But we're all at different levels. Some of us know a lot of stuff. He tickles me all the time. He'll say things like, well, Kirk, you know all about this, and like I do. You know, he's probably forgotten more about the ancient Hebrew alphabet than I'll ever know. So, but he's very kind. The reason I went to trying to translate so much of this and go over the things that he would write is because I'd kind of been down this road before. I went to a church where we had a preacher who was a theologian, was a scholar, a PhD, and so forth, and he spoke all these languages. And unfortunately for us, he lied about tons of things. So one day we were reading Yada Yada, and my wife said to me, she said, you're pretty confident this stuff is true. And I said, well, logically, it certainly is true. And what I know of the language and the translations, I can pretty much prove he's going down the right path. And then I started to buy extra books, and then we had some concordances, you know, like Strong's and so forth, and I bought a whole bunch of more books and started to do the translations myself, or at least look up tons and tons and tons of word, and came to the same conclusion. Yeah, this is exactly what it says. I was a high school debater, so I kind of like to do that. Did you debate in high school at all or something like that?
I was always told I should. I never did. Mm-hmm. I never did.
Well, you argued a lot, probably.
With my parents all the time, and I knew I was friends with most of the debate guys, and they always told me to come out. I was a very questioning. I still am. I'm a very questioning mm-hmm. person. I don't like when people just blatantly tell me this is right. And there is nothing. It's why I'm drawn to the Torah. It says, well, this is right. You can do what you want. But, you know, look at this. Take this. This seems reasonable, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. I mean, I've always had a problem with religion. When you have Adam and talking, does he ever tell Adam to pray? Does he ever tell him to bow down? And these are things that, you know, in Christianity, that's what you do. You do that constantly. You have to pray. You have to bow down. He never asked Adam to do that. Even when Adam disobeyed him and got kicked out of the Garden of Eden, He didn't make him repent for his sins. He didn't say, you have to repent now. He just said, all right, you go out now. You do your thing now.
Well, in all fairness, though, he did kill an animal, and he did take the skins and protect them. That's a form of protection when you're no longer going to be in the environment they were in. So, I mean, he was awfully nice in their departure.
Well, you know, definitely. So. There was never any...
he didn't kill them.
He never did anything to Adam and Chala in order to make them... They knew what they did wrong. They knew they were wrong. But he never did anything to further punish them to where they had to sit and, you know, every day you better bow down and give me three
Hail Mary.
Yeah, there's never any of that.
No. So, I was kind of the same way for most of my life. My father was not religious, so from the time we moved from Alabama to Australia, I never went to church. Dad never liked it. My grandfather was the same as was an elder in the Presbyterian church like Yada was. And so I got kind of both views. And then in high school, I started in college, I read a lot of Velikovsky and things that kind of proved to me that, boy, these guys were honestly reporting. The archaeology is there, so I knew there was a God. I never had a problem with God's dead. There's no God. I wasn't an atheist, but, I wasn't really hung up on the churches. And then I kind of had narrowed it down to the Jews were his chosen people, the Yehudim. I knew that. Then you have the Christians who understood there was Messiah, and so I didn't know, well, let's say the Jews obviously don't give any merit to the Messiah, Yahusha. So unfortunately, that's kind of left me with over here in this camp, and then I just kept searching to see if there was anybody that really knew enough about it. So that's what wound up. That's where we wound up with a little theologian there, and boy, that turned out very poorly. But I did learn a lot. But he missed all the key points because he was really in the camp with Paul. And so that's kind of my story, and doesn't seem that far removed from your story. But what I wanted to do, Scott, and was to kind of clear up some misconceptions held by Christians in the Christian world, because I came from that frame, and I thought we might start here. And the here being, I got some quotes, dug up some quotes to from Hosea. And I wanted to start with that, and then you jump in whenever. This is Hosea 4:6, and he said, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you rejected knowledge, I also will reject you." He said, from being a priest or a witness would be probably more appropriate to translate. "I will also reject you from being a witness for me, because you have forgotten the Torah of your God, and I will forget your children." Well, that's a terrible consequence to start to realize that he's talking about people who don't study the Torah, people like the Christians. And as a Christian, that should kind of make me shake in my boots. He just said that, you know, if I avoid or disregard his Torah, I'll die. Now, when you die, your soul dies with you. And I don't think Yosha... Oh, Yahweh rather said anything about, in that statement, he said anything about burning in hell or death and destruction, I mean, but rather death and destruction. The soul and the body die, and that's the assumption based on what he said. He didn't talk about hell and fire and brimstone, did he?
No, not at all.
No, no. So, the other day we talked a little bit about this at length, the soul and the body, I mean, about the, conversation rather in John 3. We'll continue right after this break. What I was saying, Scott, that the other day, as you probably recall, we had a rather lengthy discussion about John 3. And Yahusha was discussing this very thing, the nature of the soul and how to continue on. And he was doing it with Nicodemus. And what he actually said, as best we can figure from the writings of the witnesses, he said... teacher, teacher, he probably said rabbi, rabbi, but let's assume he said teacher, teacher, what good and beneficial thing, this is Matthew 19:17, what good and beneficial thing shall I do that I may obtain eternal life? And Yosha said to him, he says, why are you asking me, and what is good and what is good, healing, and beneficial? There is one who is healing and beneficial. So if you wish to enter into life, observe his instructions. And every time you see the word instruction, of course, he's talking about the Torah. Now, as they moved along in that conversation, he said to them, you know, he said to Nicodemus, rather, that if you want to live, if you want your soul to continue to live, you basically only have two options. A soul has to be attached to, associated with the spirit. And, of course, the spirit you want to be associated with, of course, is the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit. That's the spirit of God. And then you would be, your soul would live eternally. Otherwise, it just dies, it diminishes, and it doesn't, you'll never wake up. It's just, it's not a punishment. Death is not a punishment in that regard. It's not torture, as it is depicted in churches. It is simply just the end of life. Now, the tragic side of that, the spirit of attaching yourself to a spirit, if you exist with one of the Malachs, which are known by Christians, or spoken of Christians as angels from New Angelion, the Greek term, then you can also live forever. But unfortunately, as you know, the a third of heaven of the Malachs that produce these evil demons, they will be incarcerated at the end of time, and they will be placed in Sheol, a place of questioning, a place of in the pit. And that would not be a place that you would want to live. So the the nature of the soul, obviously, there are three places, and Christianity doesn't talk about those three places. Had you ever heard that before?
No, because they always, it's always, you've always heard about hell.
Yeah.
You never heard, and it was this big, fiery, horrible place, and mm-hmm. it was, you were tortured for eternity and things like that. It was never as it's actually described.
Yeah, it's just, it's not an option, and that's a kind of a control mechanism to begin with. And as it turns out, I guess that's what keeps them in the seats, and you run to them and you give them the money. So it's rather deceptive, to say the least, if you don't give the people, if you don't tell them the truth. I mean, every word out of God's mouth. So speaking of deception, when you start reading this, as I was reading along, here in the yada yada, as I began this quest, I've read it three or four times, and the same with the others. You start asking the question: well, surely the churches, surely the synagogues, and all the Bible societies, the Talmud, which are the writing, obviously, of the rabbis, and the New Testament, they must have some merit. They must be somewhat truthful, and they wouldn't all be lying to you. But the more I read, Scott, and I don't know about you, I won't speak for you, but the more I read over and over and over, it becomes very, very clear that it is indeed mostly filled with lies and inaccuracies. And once again, if you're the most valuable thing you have in your life is your soul, and you can only find the truth in the Torah, then I would suspect that I don't know how you, without translations or good translations, I don't know how you can overcome all this deception. I mean, it's and that's probably why Yahweh said, and probably why it's exactly why Yahweh said that only a few people will hear the message and respond to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never liked religion. I've never liked it. So even if it was Christianity, you know, social secular humanism, all that stuff, I've never liked any of it. Anything that tries to dictate to people that you can't do something, that bothers me. And so even with like the rabbis and stuff like that, even they've always had things that always seem to like, well, you're trying to control people. You're telling people that they can't do something. Why would if I didn't even have the option to do it, why would I even have the thought to do it? And that's kind of how I've never thought God was a micromanager though. So
no. And we're going to explore that in just a minute, and then we're going to talk about another criticism that's come up in regards to this very subject. So, Scott, what it breaks down to, once you study a little bit and you realize that most of these people are lying to us and most of the translations are false, then I was fortunate enough to find Yada's translations, and I was able to verify massive amounts of stuff that he said, and realized that, by gosh, those are very good translations, and so began my path. But some funny things happened along the way. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is, and I understand just from I was listening to Yada say that people criticize him by stating that he was he's made kind of a religion out of words. And of course, that's a bad choice of an adjective. But how would you answer that criticism, Scott, of Yada?
I would say, it's false because he tells you to do your own translations, and he's very adamant. And I always tell him that he's like the best plagiarizer in the world because he doesn't write any of these words.
No.
They're not his words. So.
No.
If somebody else writes it and you just recite it, that's not really, you're not the one that's doing anything there.
No, you're just carrying the message, and the accuracy is vitally important, and that's what he takes that to heart, and rightfully so, and we all should. So let's talk about words just a minute, and of course in Hebrew there's the word for word is debar. And it's made out of three letters. And I'm going to describe these letters from ancient Hebrew, the original language that Yahweh invented. And then we'll carry on the discussion a little bit more about words after that. But the first thing I wanted to say is the first letter, of course, is delete, which is a D. And a delete is a one-way doorway. In this case, into Yahweh's home is not a bad extrapolation from that. But it's a one-way doorway. You go in and out one door. And the B in Debar is from Bayet, which is, represents the family home, which is his big concern. He's, you know, he has a covenant family, and this is a description of that. And then the third letter is a R, which is a, oh, by the way, the B is like a tent with one way in. I should say that as well. And the Rosh, and the R in Debar is a face, a head of a person that can observe things. They have ears to hear, they have eyes to see, and they have a brain to think about it and observe the words. So the word or debar tells us an awful lot about it, because each one of the letters also confirm the meaning of the word. So and so I was thinking about, and I know a lot of this material is not new to me, but I was just to regurgitate some of it. Without words, of course, there's no dialogue. We couldn't be doing what we're doing now. We couldn't have a conversation. And there'd be very little communication. I suppose you can communicate a lot of different ways, but not as well as we do with words. And the misuse, rather, of words causes all kinds of misunderstanding and error, and that's what has turned us off to God's word, because it's always presented through the guises of the religions. So when they say it, and they've turned everything and twisted everything, you reject it. And I can't imagine that without words, there'd be there just isn't any relationship, and we will find that the more you study, the more you'll find that Yahweh is doing this because he wants a relationship with his children, and it's not a religion that he's after, but relationships, and the best vehicle for that, I would say, would be words. Am I on the right path?
I think you're on the right path. As far as the relationship goes, he was happy with just Adam. When it was just him and Adam, he was, hey, this is cool. I'm really happy with this. And it was actually, he was looking at Adam, and he realized that, well, he needs a companion. It wasn't Yah that needed another companion. It was Adam that needed another companion. And so he gave him another companion.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationship is, for him, whether it's a million people or one person, he was happy.
No, I agree totally. He would have been totally happy with Adam if Adam had said, I don't want to eat that that fruit. He'd still have Adam. He'd probably make him another wife. But you know, that ain't the way it goes. We're kind of dumb creatures. But all this was, the reason I was bringing this up is because the criticism of words, there couldn't be much more important thing we could do. This is how we communicate. This is how Yahweh talks to us. This is how we talk with him. I mean, you can't have relationships without words. And the beauty of these translations, and I'm still kind of plugging it because I want people to read them. I think they're a massive undertaking and brilliantly presented so that even dummies like me can get quite deep into the word.
Well, and remember, at some point he's going to come back and he's going to write the words onto people's hearts.
Yes.
He's going to write the words of the Torah onto people's hearts. He's going to take away the free choice and write the words of the Torah onto people's
I don't think it takes away the free choice, but I mean, you always have free will, but you won't want to. You'll know everything, and you'll say, no, this is, it's easy to stay on the path when you know this is the right path to be on, and without any question, without any doubts, and you understand, don't do those things because there's no benefit to them.
Well, those of us that have already made the choice to put the Torah in our we've already made that choice. So
right.
at some point, people aren't going to have the option. They're just going to know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, but another aspect of this that you have to remember is that, speaking of words again, that I, like most of the audience that listens to this program, obviously speaks English, and then to me it's the first language. It's, in fact, my first language is not even very good English. It's Southern. So God's word is in Hebrew, and the oldest known alphabet, in fact, Aleph Bet, the first two letters, the Bet, the one we were just talking about, the family home, and the Aleph, which is the Almighty in the form of a ram, even which have all these letters, of course, have very, very deep meanings as well as the word. But if because we speak in English, we have to go into the Hebrew and try to convert it to something we can understand. And anyway, we do lose a little bit in the translation, obviously, but that's why he also expanded and gave you all the different options of each one of these keywords and the when he quotes the Torah, Providence Psalms, because then you have a better understanding. We've been doing a, if you recall, the last couple of weeks we've been doing a some stuff in number six, and quite frankly, we talked for about 3 days or a day and a half at least on three words. The whole line in the opening thing is only has three words. I mean, so obviously the language frame that Yah speaks in is extraordinarily rich, and but we have to have an awful lot to understand it, and that's why we have umpteen thousand pages for these books, or at least 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 pages, and you just have to want to go in there and read it and study it, because granted, it's a lot, but you don't have to do it in a hurry. You can do a little bit each day and just keep reading and studying. I was just going to, say that God, whose name is Yahweh, wrote his message also in stone. And that's talking about the words, where we find his word. He also wrote it in stone. And if you recall, when somebody writes something in stone, then they want it to be quite permanent. I know it may be a metaphor, but it is quite permanent and it's eternal. And he dictated all the details in the Torah that he gave to Moses in the form of scrolls. So life comes by way of words. Just going on and on about words, I kind of made a few notes down here, and I said to myself, life comes by way of words to people who reach up to him. Did you know that Moshe's name is written with a M, and then an M, the water. We have the teeth and the shin, and then we have the hay, which is the person standing up, ready to walk or engaged. And I was thinking about this when I was thinking about words, and because Moshe wrote it all down and he presented it all to Moshe, who gave all these words to us in the form of a scroll, although Yahweh did also say it to all the people live, but we get it through the form of the scrolls. So I was thinking about Moshe, and I wrote down his thing, and you have the first letter, the mem, which is like waves of water that we use as an M in English, is life. And then the teeth are always depicted as nourishing words. And the people are who reach up to him. So I kind of put that together. And in my little brain, I came up with, life comes by the way of the words to the people who reach up to him. I don't know that that's, that could just be me talking, but it seems to say that as well. I know he means, I also know that Moshe means to call out. But if you just look at the letters themselves, so everywhere God speaks, the words are have so much depth. It's not a quote-unquote religion of words. It's just a recognition that words are so powerful, and that's what he wants to, that's how he conveys things to us, and that's what we should be examining them. So I think I'm on solid ground when, and he's obviously on solid ground when it's all about the words. Is we still on the same page?
Yeah, it also shows you how important not only words are, but names are. Every name says something. All the names, Moshe, Yahusha, Aaron, all these names say something. And they tell you more than just the person's name. And that's the words, like you said.
Yeah. So the story is told in such depth and breadth because of the way that he's presented it to us. And, you know, in Christian vernacular, he became the living word, and he tabernacled with us. You know, and that's, of course, he came in a diminished form in the name of Yahusha. And if you look at that, you can see that the first four letters of that are Yahweh's name, and then the Shah, the S and the H, the I, or the, rather the teeth, the thing that looks like teeth, and the I constitute saving. And we'll talk about that in just a moment when we return. Scott, as I was about to say, all my hemming and hawing around may not have been that articulate, but basically what I was trying to convey was that in answer to anyone who is challenging anyone, for that matter, the study of the words, he calls his Torah the word. Anyone who would challenge that is kind of, that's a ridiculous accusation. I mean, of course we're supposed to study the word. Of course we're supposed to give it our full attention. We're supposed to shamar the Torah. That means to study his word in great depth. So, I mean, to me, that's kind of a non-issue. But now I'm going to proceed to the trouble with studying the word, as we have found that so many people lie about it, and there's so much disinformation and so many twisting of what Yahweh actually said, that it brought me to this Proverbs 36. And what he says in Proverbs, he says, "Do not add to his words, lest beware he will judge and convict you, and you shall be proven a liar." And when you read something like that and you know that you've twisted it, you know that there is, I knew long before I met Yada that the early translators or the early people in Cambridge and Oxford had come up with, just from their New Testament things, when they published the King James, they'd come up with over 30,000 errors. And now we know there's, gosh, close to 300,000 differences between those and those early scrolls, that is, these scrolls and the eyewitness accounts from the first, second, and third century. That's a pretty scary warning when you think. I mean, let me read it again. Lest beware he will judge and convict you. And when he judges and convicts you, you're already condemned. He doesn't do that to his children. And you shall be proven a liar. So that is horrible for them, but it's pretty bad for us too if we can't get a hold to the real thing and read what God actually had to say.
Yeah, big time. And your best lies are ones that grab, when he says, "Don't take my words and then add to it," your best lies are grabbing truth, a piece of truth, and then extending on that piece of truth to get where you want to go. It's what Paul did. Your best liars always grab a piece of truth and then insert their own stuff into it.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is just an old King James version of Matthew 17. I've got some better ones for later. But Matthew 17, just a cursory look, it says, "Think now that I've come to destroy the law." Of course, he wouldn't have said law because he was speaking Hebrew, and he said Torah, and the Torah is not law. He says, "Think now that I've come to destroy the Torah or the words of the prophets, but to fulfill." He said, "Don't change a single thing from what he wrote down and dictated to Moshe." So we've got some serious consequences for them. So this deception that keeps going on is that's what took me so long to find the truth. Yahusha also just said, and up there he said, "Don't change." And I think you just said it a second ago. He said, "Don't change one jot or a tittle." Of course, what he was really saying was the smallest letter and the strokes of the letters. And the paid clergy, they not only changed the letters, they, quite frankly, threw away the entire alphabet. I mean, the one that he wrote, and then the ones that God desired to communicate with us. And then they changed the meaning of the spelling of the words, and then they scratched the words out, and then they wrote the arguments in the Talmud. And, of course, Paul's letters are the same thing. He wrote the arguments. And then even the Quran from Muhammad, he wrote his version of what God said and what God didn't say into that stuff. So the deception just goes on and on and on and on. So the only way you can get by that is to know what he actually said. What I was going to cover for a second is, before I get to that, I just wanted to say that, you know, the other day I was talking with Yada, and I think you were there that day, and I got tickled. Because sometimes he kind of gets me all tickled. We were talking about the don't change a jot and a tittle, the very verse now. And I have a very funny take on it. So we'll take that up in just a second, and when we come back.